Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm your host for the show.
And I'm Bob Kessler, executive producer. You probably saw the heartbreaking video of a starving polar bear that went viral on social media in recent months and makes us wonder, what can we do? And how is the polar bear population doing overall? And what does this mean for the environment at large? We'll have one of the top experts on polar bears join us. Plus, one of the top environmental advocacy attorneys in the country, Howard Lerner, has got a lot of important issues that we should know about.
And we'll talk all about it and more on this week's edition of Green Sense. Video of a starving polar bear, emaciated and possibly just hours from dying, went viral on social media in recent months and quickly became a symbol of the threat many wildlife populations face because of climate change. Dr. Stephen Amstrup has studied polar bears for his entire adult life and currently heads up Polar Bears International. Stephen, welcome to Green Sense.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, I'm very, interested to hear your thoughts about the polar bears. And in this video, tell me, is this a sign of a recent threat to polar bears from changes in the climate? Is it sensational journalism showing a sick or injured animal? Or have polar bears been facing starvation for a while and we're just starting to take notice?
Well, there's good answers to all three of those questions. First, this is a good sign of what we're going to be expecting with a warming climate. Polar bears depend on the sea ice for capturing their food, and so a longer period when sea ice is absent, which is what we've been seeing and projected, will result in more polar bears starving to death. However, this particular bear, we don't really know the story of it. It could be a symptom of a changing climate, or it could just be a bear that wasn't very effective in hunting during the season leading up to the summer when the ice was absent for a while. As far as sensational journalism, of course, anything, any image like this tends to grab the human attention and imagination. And I think that there's important lessons to be had, but we also need to be careful about the interpretations that we draw.
So what facts do you have to show that the climate's changing to respond to any climate change deniers who say the video isn't sufficient evidence?
Well, the video itself is not sufficient evidence of a change in climate, but the warming of the world is very well documented. And it's in line with the laws of physics that control how our atmosphere works. Basically, with ever-increasing amounts of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, principally CO2, the world has to warm because the sun's energy that comes in gets trapped for an ever longer period before it escapes back into space. So we know that the world has been warming and will continue to warm as long as we see an increase in greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere. And we also know that there's a linear but inverse relationship between global mean temperature and sea ice extent. So as the world warms, we are guaranteed of seeing less and less sea ice. And it's that sea ice that the polar bears depend on for catching their prey.
And as sea ice diminishes, how does that impact the polar bear's environment?
Well, polar bears catch mainly two species of seals, ringed and bearded seals, and they catch them from the surface of the ice. polar bears are good swimmers. They're better than you and me, for example, but they're not near as good as swimmers as seals. So they don't catch seals in open water. And these particular seals, we call them ice-loving or pegophilic seals, they love to make their home on the ice when the ice is available, and they hardly ever come to land. When ice is unavailable, they remain pelagic or just swimming out in the ocean. But polar bears can't catch them then, so the polar bears are forced ashore. You can think of the sea ice kind of as a giant dinner plate with these seals, which can be 50% fat by body weight, as giant fat pills laying out there in the ice, and polar bears have figured out ways to catch them.
My guest is Dr. Stephen Amstrup, a polar bear expert who heads up Polar Bears International, and we're talking about how climate change is impacting the polar bear's ecosystem. Stephen, have you heard from people who've changed their minds or become more resolute about polar bear protection after seeing the video?
Well, it has definitely captured a lot of people's attention, and because this is the kind of thing that we expect to see more of as the world warms, it has made some people even more resolute about doing something about a warming climate. But there are those who say, oh, well, polar bears have always died, and some of them have always died by starvation. So this may not be anything out of the ordinary. I think what we need to do is to step back from that a little bit and recognize that polar bears have very few enemies. Sometimes wolves can catch them, particularly the young when they're on land. And of course, humans have been major predators on polar bears for millennia, probably. But other than that, not much kills polar bears. And so when polar bears die of natural causes, the principal natural cause is usually malnutrition. They get too old, or they've injured themselves, or they've contracted some kind of an illness. They can't catch enough food, and they don't survive. So scenes like this have occurred in the past, for sure. But when scientists document, as we have, that polar bear survival is declining, what we're actually saying is that more and more bears are starving to death, because that's basically how polar bears end up. And so this image of this starving bear gives us a picture that's not a very pleasant picture, but a picture of what we're going to see more of as we'll allow the world to continue to warm.
Most people have seen polar bears in videos or in the zoo. Can you share with us some of your experiences researching in the wild? Like, what are the conditions like for you in the Arctic environment?
You know, when I was offered the opportunity to go to Alaska and take over the polar bear research project, I just thought this was the ripest plum in the wildlife research profession. Imagine giant white bears that can weigh over 1,000 pounds roaming around in an environment that looks more like the surface of the moon than environments that most of us are familiar with. And so I literally leapt at the opportunity to go to Alaska and take over this project. And from the very first year, it was just amazing. Flying out over the ice in a helicopter and looking down at that just stark environment, that you wouldn't think that anything could even survive out there. And then you realize that polar bears have evolved to take advantage of a very unusual food source, and not only are surviving, but they're thriving. You know, they're the largest bears in the world. They've changed physiologically and physically in order to adapt to that environment, and they're just really stunning and amazing creatures.
As I said earlier, most of us have never seen a polar bear live. It's either been on video or possibly at a zoo. Why should we care about polar bears, and what would the world look like without polar bears?
Well, my my thinking is this, that we should care about polar bears for two major reasons. One is that any time we would lose a part of our natural system, we've lost something that we can't replace, and we won't ever know what the value of that might have been, of that piece might have been, if we don't have it there to really understand it. More urgently now, I see polar bears as the best possible symbol of how we're changing the world's climate. Polar bears, the relationship between polar bears and a warming climate is simple. As we've already discussed, they depend on sea ice, and a warmer world will hold less sea ice. So we can see a future where polar bears could disappear. But it's not just about polar bears. If we allow polar bears to disappear, we are going to see major impacts on all of the ecosystems of the world and significant negative effects on most of the life on Earth, including ourselves.
Stephen, thank you for joining us on Green Sense and sharing your insight on the polar bears.
Well, it was a pleasure visiting with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
That's Dr. Stephen Amstrup with Polar Bears International sharing with us the threats these magnificent animals face because of climate change. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com.
Bob Kessler, executive producer of Green Sense Radio. Every week we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports Green Sense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together Green Sense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep Green Sense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at Green Sense Radio, thank you. Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Howard Lerner is a national leader when it comes to environmental legal advocacy and eco-business innovation. He heads up the Environmental Law and Policy Center in Chicago. and we'd like to dive into a few environmental issues he's been involved with. Howard, welcome back to Green Sense.
Good to join you.
Just a quick question for you. You know, a lot of advocacy and policy organizations are headquartered in Washington, D.C. Why Chicago?
Well, this is a big country, and environmental opportunities and problems aren't simply located on the coast. We're set up here in the Midwest heartland, and when you look at climate change issues, for example, the largest concentration of old coal plants is in the Midwest. The Midwest is the center of the transportation structure. So 2/3 to 70% of the greenhouse gas pollution comes from energy and transportation. If you're serious about solutions to these core climate change areas, you got to deal with where it is. It's here in the Midwest. And the Great Lakes, largest freshwater body in the world, here in the Midwest. So we're dealing with energy, transportation, and the Great Lakes, which are central to dealing with the opportunities, solving the problems here in the Midwest.
So this is a national show, and you do cover national issues, but the first story that I wanted to cover is Midwest-based. And something that didn't get much news coverage, but should have, was another spill of hexavalent chromium into Northwest Indiana, into Lake Michigan last November. And that's right in Green Sense's backyard. And this was the second spill from a steel mill in 2017. How did this happen twice?
The Great Lakes is the largest freshwater body in the world. It supplies safe drinking water to 42 million people in the United States and Canada, 8 states, 2 Canadian provinces. We can't afford to have it be contaminated, or in the vernacular, screw it up. Unfortunately, U.S. Steel has had some spills of toxic chemicals, in this case, hexachlorant chromium, that get into the Great Lakes, into Lake Michigan. That's not acceptable. The first time U.S. Steel spilled and they recognized that they did it, and there was a second case where they, if you will, sort of perhaps hid the ball or didn't quite fess up what they did. That's also not acceptable. So we think the U.S. EPA is taking action. The city of Chicago has announced they're moving forward. Some colleagues at the University of Chicago Environmental Law Center have been very helpful on this. And it's time that we reinforce that basic rule. This is the Great Lakes. It supplies safe, clean drinking water to 42 million people. It's not acceptable to pollute it. And if an accident happens, you need to tell people right away so we avoid problems from it as much as possible.
There's been some reports about the Indiana Department of Environmental Management and U.S. Steel covering this last release up. Any feedback on that?
You know, unfortunately, the federal government is stepping back from aggressive environmental monitoring and enforcement under the Trump administration. Scott Pruitt has simply been ahead of the U.S. EPA. There's really not a precedent for. He's not moving in the right direction. He's moving in the wrong direction with misguided policies and proposals. This is where we need the state environmental agencies to step up and do a very good job while the federal government is stepping back. And when it comes to the U.S. steel contamination in the Great Lakes area, Lake Michigan, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, it doesn't seem is doing what it should have been doing here. That's unfortunate. Some of that's going to be, you know, figured out in the enforcement proceedings, but it shouldn't have gotten this bad to begin with. And this is one where business, U.S. Steel, needs to do and should have done and must do a better job. And so are our state environmental agencies in this case.
With President Trump cutting the EPA, as you've mentioned, could incidents like this become more common in other parts of the U.S.?
Well, certainly when the president sends the signals he sent, which are unfortunate on environmental policy, and Scott Pruitt, as the head of the EPA, has basically sent very unfortunate signals. He's rolled back policies that are designed to protect healthy, clean air and safe, clean drinking water for the public. He's made clear that he's cutting the environmental enforcement budget, and he sent signals that say to people in the regulated industries, we're not going to be fair but tough like we have been in the past. That sends the wrong signals. We think most businesses try to play it straight and do it well. In any barrel, there are always some bad apples and bad actors. And unfortunately, Scott Pruitt, as EPA administrator, is sending the wrong signals to the regulated industries. And unfortunately, that's likely to have real impacts in terms of greater threats to healthy, clean air, safe, clean drinking water, and people being able to live in communities without toxic chemical threats.
We've covered a lot since President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement. What roles can city take now that the federal government doesn't seem to be, recognizing the impact of climate change?
You know, while President Trump is isolating the United States by threatening to pull us out of the Paris Climate Accord, and he's stepping back, and the federal government is stepping back on climate change solutions, what we're seeing is cities and mayors stepping up, and that's good. So in December, there were more than 50 mayors who came to Chicago for the North American Climate Summit. They signed the Chicago Climate Commitment. They said that their cities in the Midwest and around the country are going to step up with serious climate change solutions. There are a number of cities that are part of the We Still In movement. The We Are Still In movement is very good of cities saying, we're committed to the Paris Climate Accord and doing something important, even if President Trump is pulling the country out. So cities and states stepping up across our country, whether it's on the West Coast, the Midwest, the East Coast, or the South, or the Rockies, that's vitally important while the federal government's stepping back. But it's also important that we take and transform the words into deeds, that the sincere aspirations, the declarations, the statements that are being made by cities and states are transformed into real, meaningful climate change solutions, actions. And that happens sooner, not later. So all cities can and should be purchasing 100% renewable energy, clean wind power and solar power within 5 years, by 2022. All new purchases of vehicles for city fleets, municipal fleets, should be electric vehicles, unless there's a really good reason to do otherwise. And all cities should maximize energy efficiency, which is the best, the fastest, the cheapest solution to our climate change problems. You know, everybody says we're stepping up with retrofitting municipal and public buildings, and there's a lot of good work being done. But you can walk into buildings around our country that are municipal and public buildings, and you can almost see that here's much more that could be done. And energy efficiency creates jobs, it reduces pollution, it helps municipalities save money. I mean, these are investments that make sense. They're good for jobs, they're good for economic growth, they're good for the environment.
You wrote an op-ed for the Chicago Sun-Times outlining those three ways that you just mentioned that cities can take meaningful climate action. What kind of reaction have you gotten since publishing your op-ed in the Chicago Sun-Times in October?
We've received very favorable reactions from people, from mayors, from cities, from others around the Midwest, and actually nationally. I think everybody is excited by the city stepping up, and I think everybody looks at it and says, this is important, this needs to happen. But, you know, there's a bridge between what we view as being sincere declarations and aspirations, and then rolling up your sleeves, the hard, important work to really make that happen. So the Environmental Law and Policy Center and many of our colleagues, we are going to be working with the cities to transform these declarations into deeds. Let's make the actions happen. And the three things of renewable energy, electric vehicles, and energy efficiency are all actions that make sense, can be done, should be done, and will enable the cities to live up to the commitments they're making.
Howard, in these times of polarized policy and politics, how do we make the environment and environmental issues non-polarized and non-political? Because at the end of the day, we all need to, you know, drink the water, breathe the air, and you know, walk on the soil.
Yeah, I think some of the Congress is out of touch where people are. The president is out of touch, I think, with way too many Americans. The fact of the matter is, when it comes to protecting the Great Lakes, you know, that's an 85-15, 90-10 issue. When it comes to healthy, clean air, that's a more than 80% issue. When it comes to accelerating solar energy development, there's 80-85% public support when you look at public opinion polls and market research. You're seeing right now, U.S. Department of Interior announces that they're going to allow offshore oil drilling on the East Coast and West Coast. And what happens? The Republican governor of Florida steps up and says, we don't want oil drilling offshore here. The governor of South Carolina, a Republican, also, is, I'm told, said the same thing. Same thing in Maryland, a Republican. So this is a bipartisan set of issues when it comes to the public. The mayors, the governors, they are closer to where people are, and I think they are better in terms of environmental progress, certainly, than we're getting out of the Republican-driven Congress and this Trump administration. And that's sad, because over time to succeed, we need to have, we should have, and I believe we will have support from both Republicans and Democrats to move environmental issues forward. Healthy, clean air, safe, clean drinking water, clean, renewable energy, these are bipartisan, and in many Americans, these are nonpartisan issues.
Well, Howard, our time went very quickly. I have a list of questions unanswered or unasked, so I'll have to have you back on the show, and I'm sure there'll be a lot to talk about. Thanks for joining
us
on Green Sense.
Always good to join you. Best wishes.
That's Howard Lerner of the Environmental Law and Policy Center joining us here on Green Sense. We hope you enjoyed this week's show. Bob, what are we going to learn next week?
You know, it used to be Cadillacs were the cars that were the biggest, the largest, probably used up the most gas. Not so much anymore. There's a Cadillac out right now that's a plug-in hybrid. And Robert, I know you have been cruising around in it. We'll get your review with Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive.
Visit GreenSenseFarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And you can check out the list of radio stations that are our show. Keep listening, stay fresh, and always innovate, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit GreenSenseFarms.com and watch us grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.